Welcome to Recalculating America, a program dedicated to small business in America. Recalculating will help you, the American small business owner, build a new business or help you to grow your existing one. Each week, experts will give you useful information about starting your new business, and you will hear from professionals selected to help you grow your business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest and has many years of experience helping small businesses build and grow their businesses. Now he is sharing his ideas with you over the air. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do. Now, your host, Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Well, good morning. This is Dan Perkins, and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating, a program dedicated to helping small business leaders increase profits. We draw our name from the best-selling book, Recalculating, which features the contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer ways to grow your small business. Don?
Well, Dan, it's particularly pleasurable for me this morning to introduce our first guest, which I'll let you do. But Bob Heyman also, like you, contributed to Recalculating, which our publisher just told me has gone into our fourth printing. So I'm really pleased about that. But why don't you tell us a little bit about Bob Heyman?
Well, I think we're speaking to either a pioneer or a legend in his own time as it relates to the Internet. He's been all over the place, been instrumental of developing the Internet for individuals and institutions. And so, Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved with the Internet.
Well, up until 94, I was a music lawyer for what I would now call formerly famous bands, New Riders of the Purple Sage, Jefferson Starship, Maria Muldaur, the keyboard player from The Doors. And in 94, the Starship wanted a website, and I knew a kid who basically anybody, the only people who could program websites back then turned out to be kids who had picked it up. And we built a website for Jefferson Starship, and starting with that, our second client was a magazine that Don was the editor of and publisher of, called Income Opportunities Magazine. And we wound up being one of the early web design shops, and I believe we were the first to ask the client, instead of asking when we were done, would you like another website, we would ask, would you like us to build traffic to the website. We called doing that audience development. And so we got into early versions of social media marketing, various techniques of media buying over the Internet, and sort of inadvertently, and I can tell the story if you wish because it tends to relate to Jefferson Starship, my partner Leland Hardin and I get credited with inventing and coining the term search engine optimization, basically for the practice of getting clients' websites highly ranked in search engines.
Well, let me follow that with another question. I am fascinated at people who have vision to see things that other people can't see. What was it that attracted to you to this idea of the Internet, and how is it that you saw opportunities before anybody else?
I guess everything in life is accidental and anecdotal. We got hired, Leland and I, to help promote what turned out to be the first online multiplayer game site. And they were not even doing the Internet, really. They were going to hook up people playing games in tents at rock concerts. And we had read about or through a contact I had, which is a whole other story, a guy named Ted Nelson, who, unlike Al Gore, really is the guy who invented the Internet. I was familiar with at least the concept of the Internet, and at that point the WWW protocol had been developed and people were beginning to build websites. So we proposed using the Internet to promote this company. And essentially we're looking for a PR firm, and we had no track record and no history. So they went with a different PR firm, but they said, boy, this Internet idea of yours, that seems like a really good idea. You should do something with that. And we did.
Well, if you think about that was 1994, did you say?
Yeah.
94. We're at 2017, 2004, 2014, 23 years ago.
Right.
I guess the there are two questions that I think one is more specific about the Internet, and the other is more specific about our listener, which is the small business. So let me start with the first one.
Sure.
I wonder if the Internet, when you were involved in starting it up, and its uniqueness and attractiveness to lots of different people, has now become mostly noise and is less effective. What do you think about that?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of clutter. The thing I'm focused on now from a marketing standpoint is many of the techniques that we help develop and others help develop broadly using the Internet gets called content marketing. And the interesting thing about content marketing is that human attention span has gone down and the amount of stuff to read or pay attention to has gone up. Basically, there's a Microsoft study that shows that consumer attention span has declined from 30 seconds in 1920 to 8 seconds now. And since scientists tell us that the attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds, humans now have a lower attention span than a goldfish.
Let me interrupt you there for just a second and ask you a question.
Right.
What does that say about us as humans as to how we have evolved?
Well, probably nothing good, I suppose. The fact that we can cope with it at all probably speaks to us as a species. We can process a lot of information and we multitask, but as we multitask, we pay less attention to everything. We think we can multitask, but we probably can't. There's just an amazing amount of content, partly because of the Internet and everybody having a website and people adopting the idea that you appeal to consumers by creating white papers and articles and blog posts. There's 480 minutes a day that it would take to absorb all the content that are, being presented to you every day. So that's an 8.5-hour chunk of time. It's basically a full-time job just consuming content if you're actually trying to do that.
Well, I write content for 7 different blogs. TheHill.com, The Daily Caller, Constitution, Reagan Baby, and others. And there are times when I will get, and Don writes occasionally for Constitution.com also. But there are times, like this past week, where I had over 3,500 shares on one article. I've also had as little as 8 or 10, but I guess my concern is that if content is king, the type of content is really the most important piece of royalty, which is what we're trying to do here on the show. Is we're trying to be two guys that are trying to help people like ourselves who are entrepreneurs, small business people, get through all the clutter and deal with what are the most important issues to our audience. And I think we are resonating with that because right now there's not a lot of shows that produce this. But let me move on to my second question.
Mm-hmm.
With a short attention span, as you so accurately illustrated, Do you think, because of the short attention span, the users of the internet, both the providers and the followers, have become complacent about internet security?
Oh, sure. I think just the news of the day tells you that anybody and everybody can get hacked. Security is, I just saw last night that the first most popular password is 123456, and the second most popular password is password. And people just don't take it seriously, or think it can happen to them until identity theft happens, or they get phished, or something of that sort. I think you need to be paranoid about security, just because there's so many. It's so easy for hackers to get information. You can't assume anything is particularly secure. By the way, I do want to mention, just in terms of your own mention about shares, there's a study that the average commercial business blog post gets less than 8 shares. 50% gets less than 8 shares.
Wow. And that's in blog posts in general, regardless of whether it's business or commerce or whatever. It's just an 8 share.
Well,
it's in
content marketing, so I'm assuming that it's blog posts that are meant to be, you know, hopefully are going to go viral and don't.
But the average share is 8.
Well, the 50% get less than 8.
Do you have a sense of what the average is across the universe?
Somewhere between probably 50%. I mean, the 75% get, I'm sorry, only 30% get more than 34 shares. So I'm assuming the average share is probably somewhere around 5 or 6.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. So it kind of begs the question, which is an important question, but perhaps a controversial question. If that's the effectiveness of the marketing, is it worth it?
Well, I would differ with something you said earlier. I don't think content is king. I think content distribution is king. There's a really good new book called Hitmakers by a guy who writes for The Atlantic about, you know, how you achieve popularity in what he calls an age of clutter and an age of inattention. So distribution and partially that's the fact. I mean, you guys have a radio show that gets you distribution. When you post on Daily Caller or Huffington Post or something, you can be assured that's a channel that has distribution. I think content marketing is the most important thing that businesses can do, and there are ways to try to overcome clutter, and of course that's what we try to help clients do. Part of our practice now is to try to use combination of what I would call push and pull techniques. Push being, you know, PR and advertising, but pull being a creative use of search marketing to achieve higher distribution, you know, higher content distribution.
So if I understand what you're saying correctly, what you're saying that while content is important, the distribution platform is even more important.
Distribution not meaning just the platform, but obviously, you know, ways of getting it out. I would say the biggest failure that people have in content marketing is they write what they want to write rather than what people want to read. And you can use search techniques to find out what are the most searched queries. In other words, what are people talking about and interested in? And you should use that to guide what you write about, or at least the way you write it. I would tell a client that from a search perspective, and I think search is the most important marketing development that the internet has brought about. Search engines have replaced word of mouth and directories as how people find information. And the beauty of search is that when people search, they're manifesting very often a purchase intent. And if you can intercept people when they display a purchase intent, you have a good chance of making a sale. And this is not new to the Internet. Car manufacturers have known that if you put a billboard for a Chevy near a car dealership, a Ford car dealership, somebody who's going to over to a Ford dealership to buy a Ford might see that Chevy billboard and instead buy a Chevy. So you're essentially intercepting purchase intent. The same thing works that way in search. What you want to be, I would tell a client that everything that what you need to know is everything you need to know you could have learned by watching the game show Jeopardy. You want to be the answer to a question that people are asking.
Right.
You don't want to just be talking about what you want to talk about. You want to talk about things that have a high degree of search volume. And one way of looking at it is search to me has two parts. One is getting the traffic you're, let's say, entitled to. In other words, if people are looking for you and they can't find you, that would be your first problem because you're probably doing something wrong in terms of you would rank poorly on search engines because you might have broken links or you might have a long response time and all these kind of things you can do to make your site more search friendly. But there's a much bigger volume of traffic you can get, and I would call it the traffic you're not entitled to. In other words, they're looking for information, and you can become relevant to that by posting content that answers the question better than other people are answering it about some topic. And by that, just a simple example, I have a client who's a retired lawyer who wrote a book about a philosophy called Ethical Pragmatism. And the challenge is, how do you promote a book of philosophy that nobody's ever heard of? Well, it turns out from a search perspective, nobody is looking for ethical pragmatism, but there's a tremendous amount of searches, especially by millennials, about pragmatic ethics. So we had him write an article explaining the difference between pragmatic ethics and ethical pragmatism, which gave him a huge boost in hits because people didn't know. I mean, when people search for something, they don't know exactly what the result they're looking for. They're just interested in the topic. So his article that contrasted the two was able to capitalize on the phrases that people are looking for and bring his spin on it to their attention.
So if I'm a small businessman, which I am, so is Don, mm-hmm. and you too,
sure.
how do I differentiate? Do I say that, or should I be looking at it that Google is a search engine and perhaps Yahoo is a search engine, but the Huffington Post or AOL or other places are not classic search engines? So if I want to find out what people are searching, how do I go about and find that? What do I do?
I have a partner who wrote a tool as a search expert called Search Triggers, which is a tool, and there are other similar tools that allow that basically look at data from Bing and Google and can tell you both what are the most searched terms and also which are so competitive that it's pointless to go after them, and where's the sweet spot of something that is both has high volume and not a lot of competition. I mean, some people get, you get an email from a search engine company, usually in India, offering to make you number one for some particular keyword. And it's kind of a parlor trick because usually they'll suggest a keyword that there's not any search volume, that being number one for something nobody's looking for doesn't really help you very much. But we start by doing research using both that tool and also looking at a client's competitors, especially the ones who are getting a lot of searches, and see what they're doing. Are they creating a lot of articles? Are they creating a web page specifically related to each different term in their business that people might look for? you learn a tremendous amount by looking at the competition to start with.
So just to go back for just a second to help, I just want to help our audience. What was the name of the service or process that you just were talking about?
Well, the tool is called Search Triggers, and it's at searchtriggers.com. And essentially, because what we found is that most people, I've seen many companies, big and small, who buy a marketing software or a marketing tool, but don't hire anybody or train anybody to use it. So we both offer the tool, but we also offer a we-do-it-for-you kind of agency service at our digitalengagementgroup.com website that would either our team would either do the research and work and tell an in-house content team what they should be writing about and what keywords should be sprinkled through an article to get highly ranked, or our content people could, you know, do the whole thing for a client and write and distribute the post on their behalf.
I'm going to turn it over to Don in just a second. I just want you to give out your website one more time.
Sure. It's www.digitalengagementgroup.com. No dots, no hyphens. If anybody's interested, we have both a white paper and a new chapter, a newly revised chapter of one of my books that we can give you free if someone texts the word ENGAGE to 650-294-8031.
We'll try and get that on the website after this show so people will be able to come back and pick it up. Don?
Great.
Oh, no. Well, Dan, you're doing a great job. We're talking with Bob Heyman, who's one of the real pioneers of the Internet. I was just going to ask him for his website, which you just did. I thought your questions were right on. Bob, as a small business owner, what are the three things that he or she should always remember about SEO?
Well, I would say the overriding thing to me is trying to be the answer to a question that people are asking, you know, about your field, about your business, about your product. Again, the metaphor would be the game show Jeopardy. And sticking in the same vein, you can learn an awful lot from a character in the movie Dr. Doolittle. There was an animal called a push me, pull you.
Right.
And you need to be both pushing and pulling your content. And by pushing, I mean, you know, advertising and PR. And by pulling, I mean research, you know, writing content that's what people want, you know, doing the research so that the content you write is something people are, again, looking for.
For a third thing,
Don, just make sure that, you know, you're getting the traffic that is looking for you by not having broken links and having the right SEO plugin, since most people now are using WordPress or something like that. You need to keep your site, you know, current in terms of SEO plugins.
I agreed. Across my desk a couple of days ago came to me an interesting statistic, which was that only a quarter of all businesses really analyze their data to decide what's effective or not. Have you found that to be the case? And if so, what should you look for in SEO and data in general?
Well, part of the problem with data is there's so much analytic information available that it's not that people don't have it; it's too overwhelming. Because, you know, everybody can get free Google Analytics, but you need to look at where you're failing. So if you're sending emails, what's your bounce rate? How can you, you know, bounce rate is the people who don't open, you know, or your open rate. How do you increase your open rate? You should look at traffic to your website and see. You know, if you post an article, did you get a resulting increase in traffic? And if you did, where did they go and how long did they stay on your site? And if they just came and left, you need to create greater ways to engage with them, which might be a video, it might be offering a webinar. But you know, how do you the analytics will tell you what's working, and as you said, people don't look. They just think that by the fact that they're posting regularly, which is certainly a good thing, is sufficient, and it's not sufficient.
When a small business comes to you for help, Bob, what are some of the questions you ask them to answer about their business before you can be an effective to help them in SEO?
I always start with who are your competitors you most respect or you think are doing things right or are the most successful, and how can we model and learn from the competition? I can't see proceeding without looking at the competitive landscape. That would be my number one recommendation.
And after that?
Well, after that, implement what you learn. Are they, whatever they're doing, you should do and do better or do more of. And are you utilizing all the tools you might have for creating content? I mean, so many sites they may blog, but they don't do it with any regularity. They don't put out a press release. They don't look at their analytics. And very often people will buy a tool and not use it or not train somebody on it. I mean, there are lots of mistakes, and there are usually errors of omission.
I turn it back to you, Dan.
Well, we're going to ask Bob to stay with us because we're going to take a commercial break. And then we're going to bring in Luke Snyder, and we're going to he's the co-founder of Fire Department Coffee, and we're going to have the two of them try and figure out how Luke can expand his business. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
We're back, Dan, but Luke still hasn't joined us. He's 5 minutes late, which is unusual. I spoke with him last night and said, so can we continue with Bob? And we're going to talk about somebody who was a real pioneer in different ways. Bob, do you want to talk about Tommy Licata, who I don't know if you're aware, but this is the anniversary of his death.
Oh, my God. Well, Tommy was a fascinating character that I met because of you, Don, who was had a large meeting planning business basically built around the conventions that came to Las Vegas where he lived. And he was the first outside investor in my first internet company, and was an inspiration and supporter. And I miss him greatly. And I was just in Las Vegas last week for a conference called LeedsCon, And I missed him more than ever just because he was Mr. Las Vegas to me.
Hey, well, I don't know about you, but I can't go to Las Vegas without missing him as well. It's a real shame about him. He died from AIDS. It's unfortunate. He probably would, if he had held out a couple of years longer. But it's interesting how he made the adjustment to the internet. I had a question which came across my desk from one of our listeners, Bob, which perhaps you could answer. What about budgeting? How does a small business budget for SEO, and what do you recommend?
I don't know if I have a recommendation as to how much of a percentage of a budget. I don't think most companies spend money on SEO. They usually expect that the web designer or web developer, when they built the website, did some SEO magic and that it's covered. And one of the difficulties with the field is there's a tremendous number of charlatans, who are using techniques that now, you know, are kind of considered. I mean, for many years after the invention of all of this, black hat techniques worked, link farms, keyword stuffing, all these things that used to work and now just get you or your client banned by Google or Bing. I think, you know, first of all, you need to look at the analytics, as you mentioned before, and see whether, you know, are you getting traffic when you put out a piece of content? Are people reading it? And where do people go when they come to your site? I mean, you obviously want them to go to the homepage and stay on the site and read more stuff. So you need to look at where you're losing people. You need to make sure that the SEO plugins, as I said, are current. But to me, the best use of search now is this whole idea of using it to guide your content marketing strategy by doing both research about what's popular and what your competition is doing.
Well, you know, we're still waiting for Luke. So, Bob, you may become our hour-long guest, but you're on a topic that all of us small businesses are very concerned about. Let me ask you a different question, then turn it back over to Dan. How do you integrate your SEO with the rest of your marketing effort? I mean, we know SEO is important. We know social media is important. But is there sort of a magical rule or ratios or anything that you know of to kind of balance things?
I don't know a magical rule, but I have a way of thinking of what search does that I think is valid. People will say, boy, I get most of my clicks from Google, so therefore I should spend all my marketing money on Google and I shouldn't do banner ads or I shouldn't do other forms of advertising and marketing. What I find is that overcredits Google. What happens is people hear your name, they read an article, and they kind of half remember it, and then when they have a need, they say, oh, I know there's something there, and they'll go on Google and look for it. And then when they click, the thing gets attributed to Google. But what might be true is that it was the article you wrote or the ad you had that basically created the interest originally. And I think of it analogous to hockey, where someone might have a great slap shot, but what the goal gets scored by is by somebody else on the team who deflects the shot in, or when the goalie makes a save, somebody else bangs in the rebound. Search is sort of like banging in the rebound. You know, it's capitalizing on interest that you may have created in some other form. So I think you need to make sure that whatever you do has you're paying attention to search, because that may be the missing link between, you know, why you may not be getting traction from, let's say, an ad. People are looking for you, and if they can't find you, they go on to something else or a competitor.
Oh, I just got an email across my desk, ladies and gentlemen. It's first time for this show, but it's there. Our second guest was Luke Schneider, who founded Fire Department Coffee, which I happen to think is one of the three best coffees in the world. But he's also, it's called Fire Department Coffee because he's a fireman. And apparently they have a major fire in his locale in Illinois, and he's out fighting a fire. That's why he's not with us today.
Boy,
so
that's the best excuse I have ever heard.
Boy. Right, I agree.
Can I share you had asked me to think about advice I might have for Luke, and can I share that anyway? Maybe he can listen to a rebroadcast when the fire's out.
Absolutely, go right ahead, Bob.
Okay, I have a client that's a spice company. They're called Morton and Bassett, and they're the third or fourth largest spice company. And they came out last year with a chili powder. And to launch it, we came up with a campaign for them of using the fact that firemen are known for firemen are stuck in the firehouse for a long time, and in almost every fire department there's a cook. And as a result, there are competitions among fire departments, chili cook-offs. And what our campaign basically was, we found a local fire department that had a champion cook-off team. We got them to use the client's chili powder, and they invited other fire departments to a competition, and the rule was that both teams or all teams had to use Morton and Bassett chili powder, and the winning team, Morton and Bassett, would make a donation to that fire department. And what we found in doing search research is that people have a high degree of credibility of they link fire departments and food in a very credible way. They think that a lot of people have heard about how firemen there's usually a cook or a cook off or the chili is good, and we suggested basically using the fire departments in a kind of competitive way to promote the client's product. I would think the same thing would work for a coffee.
That's a great idea. He already gives discounts to fire departments and the EMTs, police, for brewing his coffee. So that's a great idea. I have to tell you, Bob, I have seldom tasted coffee as good as this coffee. I brought it with me. I'm on my annual vacation to St. Martin, and it's really interesting. This is the third country I've tasted the coffee in, and it really works. I've become a big fan of the coffee and of Luke because he's started this company, he and his wife, because they couldn't find good coffee for their fire department, and went from there. So that's one good idea. He also has a program of some sorts. Do you have any other ideas, Bob, that you might want to pass on to Luke?
I just think that the brand is the fire department, the firefighter fire department idea linked to a brand, I think is very powerful. So I would again use maybe search techniques to find out what kind of, part of what you want to use search for is to enter conversations where you can be, as I said, you can be the answer to a question. My guess is that there is a lot of search or a lot of conversation around firefighters and food and beverage. And again, I think there's a public credibility that because they're stuck in the firehouse and they eat in the firehouse, the firemen know something about food. I would just look at all the ways you could capitalize from a search point of view, from an endorsement point of view. I think the brand, I think that's a tremendous potential for the brand to capitalize on that. And, getting endorsements from fire departments, and if you could claim to be a firefighter's favorite coffee, I think that would be powerful.
Well, let me, Dan, do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, I have a couple of questions. Bob, I've been listening with great interest what you're talking about and the idea of search optimization, I think, is a great idea. I somewhat understand it, and I believe in it. One of the things that, as a small business person, and having a person that I have who works with me on my social media, I really question, as I have looked over the last few years, of where I'm generating my traffic. And I use LinkedIn, and I use Twitter, and I use Facebook, and I use Google Prime. The greatest amount of traffic, and it's a huge factor, is coming from Google Prime. And in all candor, what I'm wondering is if I have a Twitter presence, I have a Facebook presence, But if I'm an author, which I am, and I'm trying to promote my books or trying to produce promote my nonprofit foundation, I really see Google Prime as far and above what I can do versus Facebook or Twitter. And I'm wondering if a lot of organizations are diminishing their efforts by thinking they have to be across all social media as opposed to the search engine optimization, if it's showing the bulk of their business and the bulk of their contacts are coming from Google Prime, wouldn't they be better off to concentrate?
I think in general, obviously, Google is the big dog. But I think that, you know, I would go back to the discussion a little bit ago about, you know, where search is sort of like kicking in the rebound. I think that some of these other efforts, you know, when you look at the analytics, it looks like everything is coming from Google, but you don't know what made people go to Google to find you. And it could be your other advertising. It could be your other articles. So I think that it's easy to over-attribute Google just based on the analytics. And Google is, you know, gets about a 70% share of search, but Bing has, or about 65%. Bing is often more effective for people than Google. They only have about a 35% share, but I have clients who report better results for their per dollar spent from Bing.
Why do you think that is?
I think a little less competition. If you look at where your competitors might be, they may be neglecting Bing. And then Facebook advertising is probably, you know, in terms of actual paid advertising, Facebook allows you to be so targeted to particular demographics and geographies that I almost always recommend some form of Facebook advertising if you're going to spend ad dollars.
I want to switch subjects a little bit, something we briefly touched on in the first segment. Do we need to take a commercial break here, Don?
Why don't we continue and we'll take a break a little bit later when Bob leaves the program.
Okay. Excuse me. With what's going on in Washington today with discussions about cybersecurity, and the director of the FBI basically telling the American people that privacy is no longer available anywhere in the world, what things should a business be thinking about to protect themselves and their client relationships in a world where nothing is safe?
Well, first of all, backing everything up and, you know, having, if you do get hacked or taken down, being able to go back up and not just be helpless. So everything needs to be backed up. I think you should basically every day assume that you might get phished, you might get hacked. It's important not to recognize phishing when it happens. I mean, it happened to the head of the Democratic National Committee and to bad effect. So obviously there is no privacy and there is no security. But as I touched on earlier, people are really stupid about passwords and password protection. You know, there are a lot of tools now that kind of can automatically change your password and generate secure passwords. And I don't think people use those to the degree that they should.
So how do you feel about some of the most recent discussions about terrorism, an attack on the electrical grid? How do you feel about, since you talked about backup to the cloud or backup to a backup device that you control?
I think the cloud is pretty good, and for most people, it's the most economical situation. But I think it was a month ago, part of Amazon went down, and so much of business in America runs essentially on Amazon's cloud. I'm not saying you should have two clouds, But a physical backup, you know, just if you just back up to a hard drive, I don't think that's an outdated idea. I think people are a little bit complacent about the security of the cloud.
Do you have any concerns that this complacency that you now talked about two or three times is setting us up to leading to a major disaster?
Well, I don't know if there's a major disaster for individuals. I certainly think we'll have some kind of catastrophe where North Korea takes down our electric grid or some such thing. I worry about, you know, that government is often has the worst technology or the most outdated technology. I worry more about government than I worry about private business.
Yeah, there was a report recently where they were talking about the quote cybersecurity computers that various departments of our government are using, and they're saying they're anywhere from 15 to 20 years old and are many, many generations away from modern technology. Again, is that
exactly
part of the complacency that we see, that even the government is complacent about security?
I think the government is the most complacent about security. I mean, and at every level of government. I mean, it's hard to get budget for new gear. It's hard to get budget to train people on the latest techniques. I think there's a tremendous problem in the public sector. Companies are better about it, but small businesses don't have the budgets necessarily to keep up either.
You know, Bob, last week we had an attorney on from Atlanta who is a cybersecurity, her firm is a cybersecurity expert, and she was talking in some regard to what you were saying. But I asked her this question, and I'll ask you the same question. When we have an admission, for example, Yahoo indicating that they had been hacked, but they didn't release it to their customers till a year later, or credit card files being hacked in the tens of millions. Do we have a situation where we talked about complacency. If you get a notice that your credit card file may have been hacked, there's always generally some litigation involved. But there doesn't seem to be, from the public, at least from my perspective, any great outcry for these institutions, whether they be banks or insurance companies or consumer finance or even the government. Doesn't seem to be any outcry, and there doesn't seem to be, in the case of public companies, when they have 300 million files taken or whatever, there doesn't seem to be any significant change in the earnings of the companies. And that they don't seem to be losing an inordinate amount of accounts. What do you think's going on there?
You know, it doesn't become an issue. I mean, it's only an issue for Yahoo because they were, you know, being bought by Verizon, and you know, it put the deal in question and it put the price in question. There's not really a price to be paid because people don't perceive that it only happens to one company. I think people realize, you know, it's like fake news. It doesn't seem to be anything anybody can do about it, and people don't get outraged about things that can't be solved. More attention should be paid to it, but it's not like you can go to a company that's more secure than another company. Hackers just seem to be endlessly inventive, and it's hard to stay ahead of it. And again, people accept it, and in a lot of cases, you know, all of this hacking happens and data gets stolen, but the hackers are doing it just to be able to steal stuff, not necessarily to actually create steal your money. They're just trying to, you know, they do it for bragging rights, or they do it, but it's hard to see in some cases how the hackers actually profit. I mean, individual identity theft is probably a bigger danger to the average person than having, you know, and that obviously can be achieved by large-scale hacking, but I've also seen it, you know, people can, hackers put something in a an ATM or at a supermarket and can steal a whole lot of data. Those are the people who are more likely to break into your account rather than something that's happening over the cloud.
So
I'm going to interrupt both of you. Luke is, I think, has joined us. He's an 847. Luke, are you on?
Yes, I am, Don. How you doing?
Well, fine. Luke, I got an email saying you were out fighting a fire. We started the program without you. We only have about 5 minutes left before we come close to the end of the program. But Bob Heyman has been on and has been talking about your product, Fire Department Coffee. Tell us in a very short time, Luke, a little bit about yourself and your product. I know we're running late.
Sorry I was late getting on the show. Thank you. In short, we're a coffee roasting company founded by two firefighters who are also veterans, and with a mission to do more than just create good coffee. We're a very mission-driven company, and we model our company around service, charity, and family or brotherhood and sisterhood. We've taken that from the military and the fire service, and try to incorporate that into our business and build relationships and partnerships through other companies who also value the same things.
Bob, can you tell Luke in shortly, and I'm going to arrange for the two of you to talk, but what you essentially said to us earlier that you thought was a good idea and how you thought his brand was powerful?
Yeah, sure, Luke. I started by saying I have a client that's a spice company that came out last year with a new chili powder, and we came up with the concept of them promoting themselves by tying into the whole cachet that firefighters have about food. Lots of people know that, you know, firefighters are stuck in the firehouse waiting for the fire, and usually in a firehouse there'll be a cook. And apparently all over the country there are chili cook-offs between fire departments. So we gave them the idea of sponsoring chili cook-offs between fire departments, in which the only rule, and the company was going to give a cash donation to the winning fire department, and the only rule was that in the recipe they had to use Morton and Bassett chili powder in the entries. And it turned out to get a lot of publicity, or it was of interest from a PR standpoint, because of the fact that fire departments have this reputation. And I think any food brand that can take advantage of that, especially you having that in the name of the company, I think there's just a tremendous credibility and an opportunity maybe to partner with fire departments or get into a competition. I'm not sure people have coffee cook-offs the way they have chili cook-offs, but endorsements by fire departments would be powerful just because of the resonance that seemed to have for our spice company with consumers. The fire department idea, for very good reason, is associated in the public mind with quality food.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great point and a great idea. And I think anytime you can offer engagement and get people involved is always powerful for your brand to build those relationships, because consumable products, especially nowadays, have gone people buy products that they connect with and relate to, and so I think when you create that engagement, it's really powerful to help build those relationships with your customers.
Luke, this is Dan Perkins. I've been listening to you, and I wanted just to take a moment to share with you an idea, because we do, you and I have a common ground in the sense that I have a foundation called Songs and Stories for Soldiers that helps deal with post-traumatic stress disorder, sleep deprivation, and suicide. And I think there'd be a real interesting marriage between, we're in 63 hospitals and clinics around the country. But I'm thinking in terms of branding, and you could do it with other organizations, on your coffee packaging, you could be, and I'm not trying to give you the words, but we have some other organizations that we work with that are for profit, and they have on their website or their label proud supporter of, and you might want to think in terms of adding a dimension to your, and you may be doing it, I don't know, but on your labeling of your product and on your website, the other organizations that you work with dealing with veterans and other people, because I think you might find, you might find, and Bob might agree with this, that you may connect with a broader group of people if you look at how you're utilizing the existing relationships that you have to tie into service organizations or other people who have similar concerns about the plight of veterans. And I don't know, what do you think about that, Bob? Is that a good idea or not?
I think it's a great idea. One thing we've discovered with social media marketing is that among the things that people are most willing to share is things related to their charitable interests. So, you know, people may not be interested in what your business is doing, but if your business is supporting a local charity or a national charity and there's something about that to post on social media, that will most times be among the most shareable content you could post.
Yeah, we have a company here in Southwest Florida who became a corporate sponsor, and their advertising on television and radio just has a little spot on their screen that we were a proud supporter of Songs and Stories for Soldiers. And we have a mortgage company out of Maryland doing the same thing. So I think it does help. And we would love to talk to you off air sometime, Luke, about how we could work together and we could help you with your mission too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I would love to talk with you about that. Thank you.
Luke, we have exactly 1 minute left. Luke, you have 30 seconds. Your website and how people can reach you.
Thank you. Yeah, you can find us at firedepartmentcoffee.com or search Fire Department Coffee, department spelled out, or DEPT. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Fire Department Coffee. Right now we're offering a subscription promotion that if you sign up for a subscription, you get 30% off your first order, and then 10% off all following orders after that. And I really appreciate your time, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Sorry it's such short. Bob Heyman, your website and how people can reach you?
Sure. It's www.digitalengagementgroup.com. And I would suggest just in terms of content marketing, one thing we didn't touch on is there are lots and lots of article sites that are free or very inexpensive places to post your content, you know, in addition to your own blog or Facebook. I've got a really good list of those kind of sites, and if somebody wanted to email me at bob@digitalengagementgroup.com, I'd be happy to share the list.
Super. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you.
Dan, we have to have both of them back.
Absolutely.
Again. Ben, you have 30 seconds. What would you like to say?
Well, I've enjoyed both gentlemen today. I think hopefully our listeners learned some ideas about what's going on and what they can be doing in the social media area, especially in the contact marketing with Bob Heyman. And unfortunately, I've never been able to drink coffee, but I understand from Don that the Firehouse Coffee is one of the best. So I wish you luck, and I hope
that
we can work out something together to help veterans. So I think we're out of time here, Don. So, Don?
Great.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's show was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, for past shows and special offers. And until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.